N.
What is it good for? Oh, what's it made for?
Good afternoon. Welcome to In Context. My name is Ken McDermott Raw. I'm here with my fellow host, Gus Cantavero.
Hey, everybody.
And behind the boards is our military affairs commentator, Marshawn McDermott Raw, who is doing extra duty today as our board operator.
Good afternoon, everyone.
In Context is on every Monday, except the first Monday of the month from noon until 1. We cover a variety of political subjects, and it's a call-in show. And it's part of a strip that goes from Monday through Friday of 12 to 1 of community-oriented, listener-oriented radio. Today, we're going to take a look at a very important issue, the health care system, and particularly examine Obamacare. And it's an issue that's going to be very important in the general election for president this year, probably along with jobs. It'll be one of the two most important domestic issues. And it's going into effect in January 1st, 2014, for the most part. It was passed in March of 2010, but a lot of the features of it will be phased in over a period of many years. But the most important ones will go into effect in January 1st of 2014. And we're going to take your calls, and we want to hear your comments, whether you like it, whether you don't like it, whether you think it's good for your family, whether you think it's good policy for the country. But before we get into that, I'd like to try to frame the issues, because I'm sure we'll have a lot of comments and good criticism of the plan, by taking a look first at the kind of health care system the United States has today, pre-Obamacare, and how Obamacare is going to change our health care system. So what does the system look like today? Well, we have a country of 300 million people, and people get their insurance coverage, if they have it, in various ways. About 55% of us, a little bit more than half of us, get our insurance coverage through our employer. Okay, but a very substantial part of our population, 31%, get their insurance coverage from the government through either Medicaid or Medicare, which, of course, is for the seniors. And it's about evenly divided, a little bit more for Medicaid than Medicare. Now, the rest, according to the 2010 U.S. Census, 16% of the American people had no insurance. Okay, that amounts to 50 million people. Now, who are these people? You may hear, well, many of them are undocumented aliens. And the Kaiser Foundation, which is has a great expertise in healthcare, estimates about 15% of the uninsured are undocumented aliens. And that's important to identify because they are not eligible for a government health insurance, for Medicaid in particular. So if you knock it down, take them out, you're still talking 40 million plus Americans without health insurance. So how much does the current system cost? Well, it's cost running now a little bit more than $2.5 trillion, but it's growing very fast in dollars. It's been growing very fast as a proportion of our budget. It's in fact now a huge part of our gross domestic product. Healthcare in this country is now 17% plus, between 17% and 18% of our gross domestic product, which, believe me, is huge. It's almost one in every $5 in our economy is now going to healthcare. Now, to give you a sense of how big this is, if you look at our major competitors, the industrial nations of Western Europe, countries like France and Belgium and the United Kingdom, they spend roughly $1 in $10, around 10%. And, of course, they cover just about everybody. So we have a system that is incredibly expensive. Where does the money come from? Well, if you combine Medicare and Medicaid, it's about 40% of that whole pie comes from the government now, and the rest from private sources, say individual insurance policies or the group policies you get through your employer. So the federal government and a little bit of the state, although that part is shrinking, it's mainly the federal government is putting in almost 40% of our health care budget. People who have to go out and buy insurance, on average, according to the government reports, are paying about $15,000 for a premium. A premium's for individual health. I mean, I don't mean individual. If you go out as a family and try to buy it on your own, you're going to pay on average about $15,000. And in preparation for the show, I went online and I looked at a very big insurance company and I saw what their premiums were. And when you figured it all out with the premiums, the huge deductibles and whatnot, it was about $15,000. And it could be a lot more than that if you go outside their preferred providers. If you go, they're all pretty much HMOs now. You go outside the list of doctors you're given, and it might be a small list. You could end up paying $20,000-$30,000 for health care in a year, even though you're theoretically insured. So it's a lot of money on an individual level, and a lot of money on a national level. I would also suggest we include food stamps in the equation. Well, people don't normally do that because I think nutrition is a huge part of healthcare, and that's running about $80 billion a year now, and that's growing fast because of a declining economy. Now, what's driving healthcare costs? Well, again, Kaiser says that it's first chronic disease. That counts for about 75% of healthcare expenses in America. Administration costs are big, especially in the private insurance end. They figure that's about 7%. And expensive drugs and equipment. And it points out, other studies have pointed out, this is not necessarily good medicine, but that's what's driving the cost. It's very profitable to have expensive equipment. And that then goes to the type of healthcare system we have, the philosophy of healthcare we have in America, which is an allopathic system. It's one that's oriented towards disease treatment through drugs and surgery. That would be as opposed to a naturopath system where you would look more
homeopathic.
You take a holistic view of the patient and factor in all those questions instead of just relying on drugs, which now, believe it or not, drugs account for $250 billion a year in our national health care budget. And as we learned from Dr. Peter Bragan, who was our guest a few months ago and did a book called Medication Madness, a lot of this stuff is probably doing more harm than good.
Yeah.
Okay, let's now move to how is Obamacare, what is it intended to do? I say it was passed in March 2010. The key provisions aren't going to come into effect until the beginning of 2014, so we have a lot to look forward to. Well, his main objective in passing this is to expand the coverage of that 50 million people who have no coverage. And the plan is it hopes to cover 32 million extra people, which, as the Congressional Budget Office has noted, will still leave something like 20 million people uninsured. But it's a huge expansion of coverage. How is he going to do it? Well, he's going to do it basically in a few ways. The first way are some provisions that I think are generally popular and they don't involve structural changes in our healthcare system. One is to let children who to stay on their parents' policy until they're 26 years old. I know that when my child hit 18, I got a notice from the insurance company they wanted to discontinue him. And so this is a big boost to families with older children who may be unemployed or underemployed. A second thing they're going to do is ban denial of insurance coverage due to pre-existing health conditions. That's going to take effect in 2014. And that's supposedly going to be balanced by the fact that we're going to bring a whole lot of new, healthy young people into the system. So the idea is it will balance us out cost-wise. Another very important way that Obamacare is going to expand coverage is through an expansion of Medicaid. As I said, Medicaid is already a huge program. It's about $450 billion, covers something like 16% of Americans. It's going to be expanded greatly by increasing the income limits for Medicare. So you now be eligible for Medicare if you raise Medicaid if for a family income of up to about $30,000 a year for a family of four. The government estimates this will increase the Medicaid role by about 17 million people. And this is, an increase of about 35% in the number of people on Medicaid. I think it could be a low ball figure because our economy continues to deteriorate. More people are graduating from schools without jobs. You know, it could be more than 17 million. But I would just guesstimate that by itself will add about $150 billion to the cost annually of Medicaid. Those are two of the really important ways that it's going to expand health coverage. And the third, and the one that's received the most press, is this idea of a mandate that everybody's got to go out and buy insurance. And that's going to also come in effect in 2014. And the idea of the mandate is that everybody's got to get insurance. Okay. If you don't get it through your employer, you're going to have to get it somehow. And if you don't get it, you're going to have to pay money. You could call it a tax. You could call it a penalty. Maybe the Supreme Court cares. I don't care what you call it. The IRS is going to collect it. And it's going to be up to a maximum of $2,000 per year per family if you don't buy health insurance. Where are you going to get the health insurance? Well, supposedly, there are all these health exchanges are going to be created at the state level. Every state's going to have a health exchange where the private insurance companies are going to come and they're going to submit policies. The state's going to review them and approve them for sale in the state. And then you're going to have your choice. And presumably, the theory is if there's this marketplace, prices for premium prices will fall and you'll buy your insurance policy there. Well, $15,000 a year, a lot of people can't afford that. And Obamacare says nobody's going to have to pay more than about 10% of their gross income on insurance. Well, you can see if you're making 50 grand a year, 10%, that's only 5,000. It's only a third of the cost of the insurance, right? Assuming all the insurance costs don't go up. So how is this going to work? Well, Obamacare is providing subsidies in the forms of tax credits, and that's going to cover people who make between the poverty level and, let's say, 400%, or say around $90,000. So if you're making between, say, $25,000 and $90,000, you'll be eligible for a subsidy that's supposed to cover the difference between the market price of the health insurance. And remember, the state's not going to set the prices for the private insurance companies. We still have a for-profit system. It's not really changing anything fundamental in that sense. It's still a for-profit system. And the government is going to try to make up the difference between what you can afford and what you can and what they want, the $15,000. And I looked at those numbers just briefly and I said, whoa. I said, they say this is actually going to bring down health care costs. I don't see how it's possible because they're expecting something like 20 million people. Let's see now, 19 million people to come in to the system, the health care exchange system, who will need subsidies. So you do some quick count. And you say $5,000 per person, whatever it is, that's $100 billion worth of subsidies in order to get people. And I'm just guesstimating. We don't know how much it's going to cost. But I think a lot of subsidy money is going to have to be paid out to keep this down to 10%. Now, one of the catches is any health insurance is going to cost you more than 8% of your gross income, you can opt out. Well, and that 8% isn't very much compared to $15,000. So I don't know how that's all going to shake down. So one of the other implications of this new system is there are going to be a tremendous amount of administrative problems that I see, or I would say problems. It's got to be a lot of work done. You're going to have 50 state systems with a different health, all of with their own health exchange. If you don't set one up in your state, the federal government's supposed to come in and set it for you. And something called ObamacareWatcher.com says that so far, even though the system isn't in place for another year and a half, there are 5,000 pages of federal regulations that have already been issued. So I think it's going to be a good boost to the bureaucracy.
And not just those 5,000 pages of regulations. Each one of those pages has references to other existing laws.
And you don't want to read them.
I actually heard that it exceeds 100,000 pages.
Okay, well, Gus, can we give out the phone number now?
Sure.
We'll continue to discuss this because we want to hear what people think. And I tried to present the material on what we have now, what we're going to do when we get Obamacare in a way that I'm not making any prejudgment about it. I mean, let's see how we can develop this conversation and what you all think about it. So give us a ring at 203-336-9756, 203-336-9756, to let us know what you think about this huge health care change that's coming down the pike in 2014. And, you know, do you think it's good for you or your family? Is it good for the country? And if you'd rather email us a comment, write us to ken@mdrtalk.org. That's email us at ken@mdrtalk.org. And we'll read your question or your comment on the air because we'll get it right here in the studio. August?
Well, I am just – this entire piece of legislation just flabbergasts me. I mean, the fact that they said it wasn't a tax and then it was ruled constitutional because it's a tax. And then Debbie Wasserman Schultz. He wants you to use the middle microphone.
Oh, okay. We'll get your mics here.
Trying to go without saying.
Yeah, that's all right. Sometimes you just got to be vocal. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, she's the chairman for the Democrat National Committee. you know, she comes on to one of those morning Sunday morning shows and says that the IRS is going to collect the funds, the penalties, and I think it was Wolf Blitzer said, well, so then it's a tax. And she said, no, it's not a tax. The IRS is just the most logical group of people to collect it. But, you know, okay, the IRS's job is to collect taxation. And if this isn't a tax, then the tax collectors are collecting it. And it just seems like it's a shell game. And the whole thing is just based on a house of cards. I mean, 30 companies, a growing list of companies have already received exemptions from Obamacare so that they don't have to participate in providing their minimum wage employees with health insurance just so that they can continue to send them through Medicare.
Medicaid. Yeah.
And this, the growing roles of the working poor in the United States is the most rapidly expanding demographic in the world. And for us to think that this is going to fix everything is a complete self-delusion, because this is just going to put everyone on the public dole, and we don't have a logical system like single payer. So instead now, this is just a giveaway to the private insurance companies. Everyone is mandated now to become a customer of a private company, which is not going to lose a dime on this, because Aetna's private interest lobby group wrote the healthcare legislation. They made sure that they weren't going to lose money on this.
Right.
There's just no way that this is going to hurt them. And people think, oh, this is going to make the healthcare companies be fair now because they can't deny you coverage. They can't deny you based on a pre-existing condition, but they're going to have their role swell, you know, multiple times over by gaining all these new customers who don't have a choice.
Sure, and the hospitals are happy about it.
Of course.
In general,
they're going to make
patients.
Money hand over fist on this.
And nothing. And I think this is the big – I understand that the goal is laudable. Let's cover more people. But I think when he sat down at the table, the most logical ways of doing it were taken off the table. And
right.
Congressman Kucinich, the Democrat from Ohio, said that, look, you know, single payer should be considered.
Yeah.
And Obama said right from the beginning, we will not consider single payer. And I think anybody who looks at that has to, I think most people have looked at it, said if you want to run it in a sensible way, single payer is about the only way to go. And the idea of Medicare for all has been around for many years. And Congressman Stark of California has pushed it for years, but it gets no place. And I always go back to that debate, I think it was the election, Kerry election back in 2004. Mm-hmm. Larry King, he's sitting around with the candidates, including Kucinich, Kerry, Edwards. And Kucinich says, let's talk about health care. He said, how come every time we bring up universal health care, single payer system at the Democratic convention, it doesn't get any discussion because of the insurance companies kill it?
Mm-hmm.
And Larry King looks around the room and he turns to John Edwards and says, how is Mrs. Edwards like campaigning? Which shows you, you know, how we get okay. how the system dumbs us down
yeah.
and cuts us off from an intelligent debate on this. And we'd like to hear what you think. Give us a ring at 203-336-9756. I mean, if you start,
they may as well have just gone to test tones at that point. So the single parent goes,
exactly.
Like, or your personal experience when you met our vaunted representative Mr. Himes here on the train station in Stamford. And what did he say
during the
about
campaign? Well, he had put out some literature which strongly implied he was for a national health, for he was for a single payer system. So I walked up to then candidate Himes at the Stamford train station, and I said, Congressman, I said, Mr. Himes, I'm really delighted you're running. We really need this single payer system. I'm so glad that you knew you've come out for it. And Himes gave me this blank look in his face. And he apparently didn't know what was in the literature. And then he said, it's not an issue I'm really familiar with. I apparently didn't know what was in his literature.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said something like, well, I don't know what we're going to do. He said, it's a big ship to turn around.
Yeah. Well, my first inclination is to just give all private money to private corporations.
I guess he'll wait until he hears from Aetna.
Yeah. They'll tell him what to do. I actually saw him at the Greenwich production of Romeo and Juliet, the Shakespeare on the Sound last weekend. And he was standing right next to me. And this was right after the Supreme Court decision was released, and he was, you know, shooting the breeze with some guy during the break, And the guy's like, oh, what a great job getting that through. And he's just like, yeah, this is really tremendous. And then they're like, so how's Martha? You know,
it's were they talking about Obamacare?
For like a brief second, you know, he's talking about, yeah, it's an election year. And, you know, I'm doing a lot of campaigning and talking about fundraising, which is really the first thing that he cares about.
Of course.
Fundraising and campaigning and getting reelected. That's really all they care about.
Just typical. I believe we have a caller in line.
We do, actually. This is John from Shelton. Go ahead, John. You're on the air with WPKN.
Hi, John. You're on the air.
Oh. Hello, John.
Just flipping through, and I came across your station here, and I think it's great.
Uh-huh.
And
thank you.
Yeah, and you know, you guys are hitting it right on the head. No one talks about the health care and everything that's going on, basically, like what you guys are talking about. And it seems like it's rigged of some sort. You just said you were talking to Hines, and he can care less.
Oh, I know.
They got their health care. They do whatever they want to do. And the people are so buffaloed. They listen to the media, you know, the primary stations, Fox, MSNBC, and all that crap.
Mm-hmm.
And the people are just so buffaloed. Now, and here's the other thing. Okay, it is a tax. There's no getting around it. It's a tax. You're an idiot if you don't think it is a tax. Basically. And what are they going to do? If you have no job and you have no money, how are you going to be able to pay for health care?
You have to go on the public dole.
Yes, but the problem with the public dole is half of they don't got no money for this. They're cutting everything.
Yeah,
cutting services. So how much money is going to be around for the public dole?
That's exactly the point. Yeah, that's what we're getting at.
That's right, because we're running a $1 trillion plus annual deficit. I mean,
that's only what they tell you. What the deficit's bigger than that.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So, and this is just, I mean, they have pie-in-the-sky expectations about how this is going to lower costs. When I look at the expansion of Medicaid by 20 million people, and I see the subsidies that are going to be needed to pay to provide the private insurance companies with what they want, I would think this is going to add hundreds of billions of dollars to healthcare costs.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, think about it. Connecticut, we all live here in Connecticut. It's the insurance capital of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't even have good insurance here in Connecticut.
Well, no, it's a small state with very limited competition. And if they really wanted to lower healthcare costs, they would allow us to compete over state lines to be able to price healthcare in Massachusetts or Rhode Island or New York or New Jersey or anywhere else. You know, that would really bring down the price.
Oh, no, you can't do that.
Well, let me ask you this, John. Do you think that healthcare should be a basic service that we get members of the public get such as fire protection and police protection?
You know, it's a six of one, half a dozen, because, you know, anytime people, like your fire and your police, for example, it starts off to be really good, but it ends up getting corrupted. So in theory, in the United States, I would say yes. However, the way the system runs, it gets so corrupt, just like it is today.
Mm-hmm.
It'll all start off, in theory, to be good.
Right.
Just like communism. In theory, it's good.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Everybody
gets a job, everybody gets education, but what happened? It becomes basically the United States. Because everybody wants to control. And it's like, if you really think about it, whatever these people say, when I say these people, I'm not talking to Hines because he's just a puppet. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
These guys, I'm talking the people who really run the show. Goldman Sachs, guys like that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Those are the ones calling the shots. Who's kidding who? They do what they want. Listen, when Dodd and Frank redo the banking ethics, but they make it legal for insider trading for congressmen and senators.
Mm-hmm.
What does that tell you?
Yeah.
Here, freaking, what's her name? What was that lady that had the TV show up there? She goes to jail. Martha Stewart.
That's
for
right. Yeah.
$7,000 or whatever.
Getting a tip.
Stewart.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, seriously. You think healthcare, and people are listening to this thing, thinking about healthcare and thinking about Social Security and thinking about how the government, oh, it's socialism. Get people, wake up.
No,
I don't know if you guys read it, but it's called Ruled by Secrecy by Rick Mars.
Yes, I know Rick Mars. I don't know that book.
Jim Mars?
Jim Mars, right?
Jim Mars, I'm sorry. Yeah, Jim Mars. What a really good book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I tell you. The problem is, if you don't want to, it's almost like the Matrix, you know, you want to eat the blue pill or the red pill.
Right.
Because what happens is when you start living in the awareness, a lot of people might not be able to handle the awareness.
Right, right. Well, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you so much for your call, John.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, when you go down the rabbit hole, that's the illustration in the movie The Matrix, you know, and the other saying is when you open your eyes to one issue, it becomes much more difficult to close them to other issues. So once you start to look at some kind of corruption issue with a real scrutiny, then it becomes much more difficult to ignore all the other issues going on. All of a sudden, issues of the war, the military-industrial complex, the healthcare industry, energy industry, it becomes so much more relevant.
I think that's what we try to do with this show. Right. If we can get the listeners the information to start, the information they need to think critically about the big issues, whether it's the war or healthcare or invasions of our privacy, once you open the door, you'll start to look at all the issues.
Right. And the caller alluded to the insider trading, you know, and I think it was Nancy Pelosi said, yeah, it's illegal, but when we do it, it's okay, you know, because they're the ones writing the legislation and they know what's going to benefit down the road. So they all run and buy up the telecom stocks or something because they know that legislation is going to be coming that's going to mandate something to help the telecoms and it's going to drive up the stock price.
You know, public policy shouldn't be made by private for-profit corporations. And their capitalism is fine if it's truly competitive capitalism, not a monopoly, as a way of making money. Mm-hmm. But it's not, doesn't perform a good basis for making public policy. So to have Obama go in his room with a bunch of people from Aetna and these other the lobbyists for the insurance companies and the hospitals and the drug companies to come up with a healthcare system is a big mistake. It's just like when Cheney went into the closed room with the energy companies to create the U.S. energy policy.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and just an example of how corrupt this whole system is, you know, where we have, as you mentioned, an allopathic healthcare industry. The insurance companies do not support any type of natural medicine. If that's your choice and that is my choice, that's what I choose to do. I choose to practice, you know, natural medicine, chemical free, and especially for my day to day, you know, care for myself. And GlaxoSmithKline just recently last week pled guilty to criminal fraud charges and were fined a massive $3 billion in fines. And I got this from Natural News with multiple mainstream sources like Business Week, New York Times, and Reuters. And, you know, this is an example of one of the companies that's going to benefit broadly from the Affordable Care Act because it's going to mean more sales of drugs. It's going to be more people going to their general practitioners, getting prescriptions for menial, unimportant little aches and pains that they're going to prescribe a drug for. And one of the things that they were found guilty of, it was $1 billion in criminal fines and $2 billion in civil fines. And the $3 billion sum was taken from a fund that GSK, GlaxoSmithKline, has set aside specifically for legal expenses. And last year, as a comparison, they made $42 billion in revenue.
Wow.
So $3 billion in fines compared to $42 billion that they made from their legal activities, such as illegally marketing drugs, forging drug safety data, bribing doctors to promote dangerous and expensive drugs, ripping off Medicare and Medicaid, lying about the effectiveness and safety of drugs. Okay? Well, this is the industry that we're propping up.
Well, it's good that they got the fine. They were caught this time.
Big deal.
But in general, the drug companies control the government,
and
the FDA.
And since the company is seen as a person now, the individuals who actually committed the crime at the companies, they're free to do whatever they want.
Of course.
They can continue doing it.
This myth of corporate personhood is a key element of this corporate control of our government. The idea that a corporation is a person with the First Amendment rights, it's ludicrous. You know, you talk about the drug companies, and that brings up this.
No, and there's no arrests, by the way, just to clarify that. No arrests were made.
Sure. It's just a paper game. And these guys are going to go on with their lives unchanged.
Yeah.
It was actually, you know, the Republicans talk about small government, but the biggest expansion of social welfare was the Medicare Part D, which mm-hmm. was created under Bush Jr. And that turned out to be a huge giveaway to the drug companies.
I mean, our small government conservative,
exactly.
George W. Bush.
It's all like totally insincere. And that's about $70 billion just for the Medicare Part D. Now, people think that it's paid for by premiums, but I got a printout here. Only about 10% of the Medicare Part D is actually paid for by premiums. Medicare is a little hard to understand because it has four parts to it, A through D. But basically, A is for hospitals, paid for largely by your taxes. That whatever 2% every week they take out.
you mean borrowed money from China?
Well, but yeah, whatever. But it's actually paid for by the Social Security tax, and there is a small deficit there, which they say Medicare is going broke. But actually, since that's the most solvent part, because Medicare Part B, which is physicians, which is also over $200 billion, so it's about the same amount of money. Is most of that is paid for out of general revenues. The premiums people pay actually cover of all maybe a quarter of it, less than a quarter, something like that. So basically, we are funding Social Security for the most, more than half of it, out of general revenues. So when they say it's going broke, they're just talking about the mismatch between the Social Security tax and for Medicare and the hospital portion of it. But basically, this again is becoming kind of like Medicaid, which is financed out of general revenue. And we're developing this humongous spending machine that's controlled by the drug companies and the hospitals and the other providers of medical services.
I mean, it's definitely good that people are covered for accidents and emergencies. Like, that part of the legislation, I don't have a problem with. You know, like, someone gets hit by a car or they fall off a ladder. Like, I think people should have disaster coverage. But the part that I have a problem with is the way that the mainstream medicine forces people to undergo certain treatments.
And that's what's gotten the most attention. If you'd like to join our conversation, we're talking about Obamacare, the current medical system, how Obamacare is going to change it, and whether you think that change is good for your family, whether you think it's good for the country. It's the phone number to call is 203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756. My name is Ken. My fellow host is Gus. And the name of the show is In Context. And we are listening to WPKN 89.5 FM, streaming at WPKN.org. And if you want to send us an email, we'll read your question or comment on the air. Just send it along to ken@mdrtalk.org. And we'll get it right away right here in the studio.
But it also seems like this entire system is like the worst possible chimera of healthcare. You know, it's like, look anywhere else in the world and it's a better example.
One thing that strikes me as, I mean, being kind of bizarre is the fact that I spent some time in Egypt, and I had to go see a doctor there. Now, I'm a non-citizen, non-resident. My ex-wife was Egyptian, but I'm there visiting family. I got really, really sick, and I was able, this is a third world country that's also just gone through a revolution, and I was able to get treatment for next to nothing. Now, their system is far from perfect, but if they can manage to do that, how come we, as a first world country, and admittedly one of the greatest countries in the world, I mean, we have the ability to do this, certainly.
We certainly do.
Why can't we figure it out?
Let me throw this out. Is it a cultural problem? Because every social service in America seems to be a profit opportunity for the provider.
Is ignorance a cultural problem? Because that seems to be rampant.
It's the greed factor, because the first question you ask when you're a hospital administrator is this individual who walked in my door covered by insurance? And then if the answer is no, you give them as little as possible, and you get them the heck out of the street, and if he dies, he dies. If he is covered, then you give him every service you can think of that will be reimbursed by whoever's
Medicaid. We need a CAT scan,
Medicaid.
But I have a splinter.
Exactly.
I encountered that at Greenwich Hospital when I was doing my ER rotations for EMT. This woman comes in and she's didn't have insurance. Her poor child took a nasty fall. I mean, the kid's neck was all contorted. She seemed to be suffering a mild TBI, traumatic brain injury, because she had an altered mental status and everything. I mean, the kid clearly took a nasty fall. And the RN says to her, listen, do you have insurance? The woman goes, no, I don't have insurance. And now my guess is she was made too much money to get on, you know, Medicare or Medicaid, but not enough to buy her own insurance. So then the nurse goes, okay, whatever. And, you know, I started yelling at the nurse saying, look, we got to get this kid on a backboard and stuff. There's, you know, you got to immobilize the poor child. And, you know, of course, the nurse would just flip it. Meanwhile, probably about maybe not even an hour later, a woman comes in with a nick on her hand that's not even an inch long. I swear to God on my life. And they said, oh, she said she has insurance. They brought in a plastic surgeon. They brought in, you know, and it was – what's insane, what seems obscene to me is the fact that the hospitals are – you know, they're in part to blame. But the fact is that if it wasn't a source for profit, if you got paid the same regardless of whether – you know, who the person was, if you were getting – you know, whether it was the hospital employees were salaried employees like cops and firefighters, then people would get equal treatment. Then it wouldn't matter,
rich
or poor or middle class. You know, you get equal treatment. Well, now, maybe this isn't the best answer, but everybody should get equal treatment.
I mean, it'd be equally unimpressive treatment.
Well, everybody should at least get equal some degree of treatment.
I looked at the French system briefly, which is regarded by the World Health Organization as the best system. They spend about 11% of their GDP on health care. Their doctors, as I recall, make about 60% of what our doctors make, but they don't pay anything to go to medical school.
Okay.
So I think it's in that sense, there's probably a lot less stress
That's
for the doctors. They're not horribly in debt when they come out.
And I mean, look, they're maybe happier. Exactly. Our system is ridiculous. And looking at where we've come from, like 80 years ago, all right, doctors were not wealthy, but they were respected and, you know, beloved in the communities. They took care of their neighbors. It was the community doctor. And remember the Hippocratic Oath, all right, is one third of your care is to be for free to
right?
the poor.
I did not know that.
Really? I did not know
and
that.
And that's been removed from the modern version, which is optional.
Oh, you're kidding.
When you graduate medical school.
Is that
school.
Right? They make it optional?
Yeah, it's optional.
Wow.
Do no harm. Optional.
Well, and another,
maybe. Do no harm, maybe.
Another thing that was mentioned to me not that long ago, actually, by a good friend of mine was tort reform. The fact that, you know, insurance problems with the excessive insurance costs, too. I mean, that's the other thing. If you give care for free and, you know, the person sues you for whatever reason.
You can't be sued for free care.
Well, medical malpractice. Well, is all I'm saying. I mean, it's like, you know, that's another thing that hikes up the cost even more. So you got the cost of medical school. You got the cost of insurance.
Well, we've basically made a system where no one wants to help anybody. Right?
Right.
It's almost impractical.
No one wants to help anybody.
Well, now look at the doctors. As you said, the doctors, they used to be making a fortune. But what I see now as these doctors is they're not making that much money. Unless they own a clinic and they own the machines, the reimbursement rates aren't very good. Like for my pediatrician, I was surprised how little he was getting. The political power shifted in the 80s and 90s from them to the insurance companies. Now they're calling the tune, and you walk into the pediatrician's office, he gets maybe $65 for a visit. Mm-hmm. He has to have an army of clerks there.
This is the general practitioner, though.
Yeah, this is
this is not a hospital doctor.
No, this is but he can't make much money. So he's not, it's not, I would think at this point, and I believe a great many American physicians, particularly the younger ones, are ready for a single payer system.
I would think so. I mean, a lot of the guys, I would think general practitioners are probably a much better example of what the medical field should look like. All right, they deal with the families, the local people. They are seeing their patients on a day-to-day basis when they get sick. But the hospitals have a completely different structure, and that's where you get a lot of the attitude and superiority. And
that's,
you know,
right.
I've done work in hospitals, and you see the med students coming in, and they just have this holier-than-thou attitude. You know, and like they're younger than me, and I'm like, what's with your attitude?
Well, Gus, what kind of business can you have where your customer comes in and you admit
and they berate you,
and they not only they berate you, but you essentially agree to pay whatever they charge, not knowing the price of any item that's
right,
going to be on
right.
that bill,
exactly.
Not knowing how many items they're going to throw on the bill,
or charging you like $60 for an Advil, you know, like because they dispense it in a cup, and they don't care whether you take it or not.
And
one time my wife broke her foot, and they gave her Vicodin, and she refused it, and they still put it on the bill.
Is that right?
Yeah. All right, that's a pretty good example.
They get away with
that's
it.
That's fraud.
And do you want to be fighting with them the rest of your life? To, you know, when they take you to court.
Well,
for
what's
their
the leading
bills?
Cause of default in the country?
Bankruptcy is healthcare.
Healthcare.
Yeah.
All right, and for example, to compare it to other industries, like you know, I was debating this with last week with somebody, and they said, "Well, you know, if you have a car, you have to have car insurance." I'm like, "Yeah, but you don't have to have a car. The government doesn't mandate that you have a car." And when you get in an accident, like my wife had an accident last week, and we had to have it repaired at an auto body shop, and the insurance company sent an adjuster down to make sure that what the shop deemed as a necessary repair was priced accurately and was all pre-negotiated in price and in a timeline, right?
Right.
The healthcare companies don't do that. The hospital just says, you need this, you need that, you need this, and we're just going to bill them for it, and then you might get dropped from your insurance.
That's right. If you'd like to join the conversation, we're going to be on for about another 15 minutes. You're listening to In Context on WPKN 89.5 FM. We're talking about Obamacare, and we'd like to know what you think about it. We're at 203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756.
And the, you know, callers may or listeners may be hearing that and say, because they didn't hear the whole show, they'll say, yeah, but Obamacare says that you can't be denied for pre-existing conditions. You can't be dropped because you got sick. Okay, but they're going to cover their butts by making sure that the enrollments swell. They're going to get more people to help pay for it, and overall, everyone's premiums are going to rise generally over time to the point where they continue to make money hand over fist.
Just a review, if you just joined the show, Obamacare basically tries to expand the number of people who will be insured by about 32 million people. Does it in several ways. One, it by preventing pre-existing conditions from disqualifying you, by allowing people to be covered up to 26 years old, children on their parents' policies, also by expanding Medicaid, a really important part of it that's not discussed that much, raising the limits on Medicaid to $30,000 for a family of four, which Obama estimates will add about 17 million people to the Medicaid rolls, who make Medicaid and Medicare almost 40% of our total health care budget. Probably the most controversial has been the mandate idea. If you don't buy health insurance, you're going to be going to suffer a penalty tax, whatever you want to call it. IRS will get it, $2,000 per household. And your alternative then, if you don't have insurance, is to go to what's supposed to be set up, hasn't been set up yet, state healthcare exchange, where you'll buy private policy. If you can't afford the private policy, and they run about $15,000 per family, that's the current price, then the federal government is supposedly going to subsidize you so that you don't pay more than 10% of your income. And I have serious questions about how that's going to work. When are these exchanges going to be set up? How the heck are how expensive are they going to be for the states to operate? How much are these subsidies going to come in? The insurance companies, the state exchanges will have no control over the amount of that these private insurance companies charge for premium. So really, that's going to be the piggy bank of the federal government.
And this seems like a fundamentally un-American law, because it eliminates the freedom of choice from the consumer. We don't have the freedom of choice of competition. We have these oligopolies, basically, that are going to dictate the price to us, and we have to choose between the three, and they're all in collusion keeping the price about the same level so that you don't get a break on anything. The only way that they can bring the price down is through subsidies, which is going to bankrupt the American public.
Exactly.
And you now are going to owe the money to the federal government if you choose not to get health insurance, like I probably won't, because I don't have it right now. I choose not to have it. That's my choice. I take that risk, and I take that money, and I put it in a savings account, and I use that money for my medical expenses when I have them. I'm right on that cusp where it's too much for me to buy private insurance, and I'm not poor enough to get on Medicaid. But this fundamentally... nanny state mentality. Who was it? Hillary Clinton last week, that I think it was her, who said that if you are so irresponsible that you don't have health insurance, that you're becoming a burden on the rest of society, you're now going to have to get health insurance. And how dare you call me irresponsible? Well, this is my personal choice. I don't want to buy into your stupid system and support GlaxoSmithKline and their $42 billion that they make every year.
Well, I think there are two problems the government has to grapple with. One is that we got 40 or 50 million people that are uninsured, and a lot of people who have insurance from their employers have crummy insurance. I mean, they may not be technically insured, but they're not covered like Congress.
Yeah, and you pay thousands of dollars a year for nothing.
And the second issue is we spend too much of the GDP on healthcare. As I mentioned earlier, it's almost 18%. It's almost one in every $5 is going to healthcare now. It's insane. It can't go on like this. Mm-hmm. And we look at our European competitors, it's like one in 10. It's around 10%. Mm-hmm. In Holland, I think it's 9%. In the UK, about 11% in France, which is widely thought to have the best healthcare system of any industrial nation. So these things have to be addressed eventually. But I don't think Obamacare, and now that we're getting towards the end of the show, I can think my bottom line is this is an attempt to achieve a laudable goal, which is to get more people access to health care. Mm-hmm. But I just don't see it as working. It is like taking a Rube Goldberg invention mm-hmm. and making it even more complicated and more expensive.
Yeah, let's turn it upside down and put it in space.
I just don't see it working.
I think we need to talk a little bit about how to actually reduce the cost of health care in this country.
Yeah.
Because I think that healthy bodies don't need medicine. right? And our food is completely depleted of all minerals. We are bombarding our society with genetically modified organisms all over the place, causing all kinds of gastrointestinal diseases, skin diseases. We have radiation leaking from plants all over the place, causing cancer. We are allowing chemicals like pesticides, herbicides, and lawn fertilizers that cause cancers in children. I mean, how often 100 years ago did a four-year-old get cancer?
I think this is key, Gus. There's right? nothing in this legislation that I see that's going to address the causes, the real causes of disease, in this, yeah. the chronic disease in this country,
no.
which is what's driving
no,
the
No, instead
budget.
You have idiots like Bloomberg saying, like, well, if we regulate the size of a soda in New York City, that's going to bring down diabetes. No, it's not. How about if you just get rid of high fructose corn syrup?
Right, right. Did we have a call, Mark?
And we have a caller. This is Tony from Newtown. Go ahead, Tony. You're on the air with WPKN.
Hi, Tony.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking the call. Look, I feel like Obamacare is far from perfect, but it is the first attempt this country has made to get most of its citizens insured, which I believe is the morally correct thing to do. We can argue the details, and hopefully over time, just as what happened with Social Security, the plan will improve, and my hope is that eventually everyone will see the wisdom of a single-payer system is the only way to go. Why this country chooses to ignore the successes of many other countries who are far less wealthy than we are is the most appalling thing to me.
Yeah, I think
and
that
I have to applaud Obama and everyone who voted for it for at least getting it moving it forward.
What do you
not
think
of, perfect, but we're moving it forward.
Tony, what do you think about the fact, though, that he took the single-payer concept off the table before he never got a chance to be in the game?
You know, that's a political decision, I think, more than anything else, and I don't feel like I'm qualified enough to say. I mean, certainly it would never have flown. Would I have loved for it to have flown? Would I have loved for him to fight for it? Maybe, but if he had just fought for that and lost entirely, we would be nowhere. We would be back to 30,000 people still not having insurance.
Right.
So
right.
I have to say the moral calculation is with Obamacare.
What do you think of the notion, though, that if we had no reform, if this were repealed, that that single-payer system would happen sooner? Because what this is going to do, since it doesn't fully go into effect until the end of the decade, it's really going to take single-payer system, make sure it's off the table
for a long
time. Until the next decade.
No, I think things have been, going this way for how many years? Why do we think it's suddenly going to change to single-payer when it hasn't for all these generations?
Well, it's not going to go to single-payer from here. It's just going to become a completely socialized system. I mean, because they're going to say that no one can afford this. The entire government is bankrupt because of this, and now the only thing to fix it is to have a government health service like Britain. They're not going to go to single
payer. It's hard to see.
So wait, are you arguing that a failed Obamacare will lead to single payer, or that no Obamacare?
I don't know. I guess what I was suggesting is a failed that Obamacare is taking away the possibility of single payer system for many years. It's going to present the possibility. It's a very bad answer, and it's going to preclude talking about single payer until the next decade, and so we'll have to muddle along, and it's just going to be horrendously expensive, and even under the own government's own estimates, it's going to still leave like 20 million people outside the insurance system. I just don't see how it's this.
I would say it is going to be expensive, and if you look at what we spend in defense, there is money that this country can spend on health care that it is spending elsewhere. There is a lot of money.
We really agree. Yeah,
right?
You know, Tony, you're preaching to the choir there, because we call for an end to this stupid war. This is just, it's horrendous for our economy, the way we're going with the defense spending. I want to thank you very much for calling.
Thank you very much, Tony, for calling.
I just don't see how you're going to go backward from this. It's a giveaway to the corporations. The corporations become infinitely more powerful with this kind of legislation. They obviously have the ability to buy whatever legislation they want. And from here, it's never going to go to a more affordable single-payer system.
Yeah.
The only thing it could possibly do is make, I don't know where it could go. It's not going to go
to
something logical.
How do we get to the, Tony, I think, wants to go to that single-payer system. And I think most Democrats actually want to, maybe not the representative of Congress, but how do we get there from here to there when whatever the solution is will be one dictated by the large, you know, drug companies?
Exactly. Could you clarify for me, is single payer the same thing as the English National Health Service? It's not, right?
No, I think, you know, we really need to have a guest who's going to explain on all the different industrial nations systems. I think in England, I think the doctor's employed by the government. In France, he's not. He's private.
As far as I understand, single payer,
the insurance system.
Single payer is a all the healthcare companies, I thought, participate in the one pool of customers.
Well, as my understanding, the single payer would be like Medicare. Essentially, would be Medicare for all.
Run by the government, though?
They hire private firms, I'm sure, to administer. I think Medicare does. But Medicare, you get rid of the private insurance companies.
I see. So that is different than the National Health Service in England because they have no other insurance companies. Right? You can buy extra insurance, but if there's the National Health Service, and then they decide who you go see.
I think the system that would be most logical would be Medicare for all, and then you'd still have private insurance that would provide these umbrella policies, like it happens now. My mother-in-law and my mother have these umbrella policies that cover what Medicare doesn't cover.
Right.
But it would be simple because Medicare has a lot less administrative costs than the private insurance companies.
Right, right. I mean, I know Connecticut, you know, all the states have some kind of service, right? Connecticut has one called Husky. And I think they have one other one, depending on how old you are and whatever. But the care that they provide is essentially just emergency care, right?
They
give you a general practitioner that they want you to go to, and then you get like a couple of well visits. But you can never get to the doctor because they're only in poor neighborhoods, and they don't accept new patients.
And even if you have, we have.
And I know this from experience.
You know, my family, my wife works for a large corporation and has what was used to be thought of as a really good insurance policy, but it's an HMO. It has a huge deductible. The list of doctors we can see is very limited. It's not like being a congressman, I'll tell you that.
Unless you get a disease or get in an accident, it's pointless.
So it seems.
Exactly, pretty much.
I mean, it seems, again, you know, this isn't necessarily my field of expertise, but as, you know, sort of a layman looking at this, it seems like this entire system that we have, at least as it exists, and including with the Obamacare, it takes care of the really poor and those, you know, the folks, many of the folks who are already on things like welfare and whatnot. And, of course, obviously, those who are making $300,000, $400,000 a year can afford their own insurance. It sounds like the people who are really getting screwed in this deal are the folks in the middle.
As usual.
Upper working class, the middle class.
Oh, yeah, they're not going to make it. We just have time for one more caller. We've got to go off in about 4 minutes. So if you'd like to be our last caller, call in to 203-336-9756 and tell us what you think about Obamacare. 203-336-9756. The name of the show is In Context. My name is Ken McDermott-Rowe. I'm here with Gus Cantavero and behind the board, Marshawn McDermott-Rowe. So we have another call coming in, and we'll be with you next Monday, and we'll be talking about fuel-efficient cars. Hopefully, we can do better than we're doing now. We'll talk about the new technologies. That'll be next Monday at noon. Join Gus and Ken and Marchand. And we have a caller that's coming through now, and we've been talking about Obamacare and what people think about it for themselves and for the country as a whole, whether it's going to be good for your family or whether it's going to be good for the country as a whole. And we have a caller, Marshawn?
We do, actually. This is Kevin from Stanford. Go ahead, Kevin. You're on the air with WPKN.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I enjoy the show.
Thank you, Kevin.
My question is, I live in a city. I hear stories about illegal immigrants walking into hospitals with multiple IDs that are not accurate and getting free health care. Does Obamacare address this situation at all?
Well, they're still not entitled to Medicaid. Undocumented aliens. And I think, as I recall from a Kaiser study, about 15% of the uninsured are undocumented aliens. I think what happens with them is if they walk into an emergency situation, somehow it gets paid. But it's not they're not Medicaid enrollees.
They're mandated to not deny anybody, which is, you know, part of that, what I was talking about, the Hippocratic Oath, which is to provide a third of your care for free. But if you go to a doctor and you speak English and you say, look, I'm poor, I can't afford it, they just send you a bill.
Well, they want to see you're on Medicaid or else. So I think it's a really good question, Kevin, and I don't think Obamacare is going to affect it one way or the other. The problem will continue.
I may have heard something about charitable pools at hospitals. Like you were saying, if you can speak English, they send you the bill. If not, they can't be bothered,
right.
And they petition to have some bills, you know, via the accounting.
Right, right. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time.
But there, we're just got
thanks a lot
10
for calling,
seconds
Kevin.
Left. But thank you very much for your call, Kevin.
You're welcome.
All right, and so that's going to do it for this show. This is In Context for Gus Canavero, Ken McDermott-Rowe, and Marshawn McDermott-Rowe behind the board.
That's my name.
We will see you next time. Make sure you check out the websites, incontextreport.com.
I'll be talking about fuel-efficient cars. So how good is the Volt? How good is the Prius?
Right.
What about
or
diesel?
European mileage. Yeah. Why is that so much better?
Yeah.
So check out the YouTube channel, youtube.com/incontextreport, and find us on Facebook.
See you next Monday at noon.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye. Rights plus the fight, we deny beauty and light. Searching for a spiritual height, that's the fight. Yeah, we're on a mission tonight. As I stand here before you, I'm prepared to draw you another picture. So consider this scripture, a hieroglyph, an artifact that you remember. A vast search for otherness brought us to this. Now if we use the time and we don't abuse the rhyme thoughts, create building blocks for a logical crime.